Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host, and today I have got Emma Ferris with me. So Emma's based in New Zealand, and for those that are Aussie or New Zealanders listening, we know that we'll say that it's across the ditch. It's a very big ditch. I think it actually used to be able to be walked across at some stage, Emma, when the skis were much what they were.
Exactly, Gondwana land when it was combined.
Yes, yeah, it all broke away, and Australia and New Zealand broke away, India broke away, South America broke away. The world changed completely. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're talking about today. Let me tell you a little bit about Emma. After a life-changing betrayal, Emma Ferris discovered that survival is both an art and a biology. As a physiotherapist and somatic stress coach,
body.
We'll go body. Okay. She realized that true resilience comes from the body, mind, and emotions as they heal together. It's not about pushing through or staying positive. It's about integrating what's happened so the stress and pain don't get trapped in your body. I love that because, look, you're a physio. I could sit here and just talk about injuries and complaints, but I won't do that. Well, I might a little bit. Emma and her sister turned a personal story into a global hit podcast called Conning the Con, which has been heard by more than 2 million listeners and ranks in the top 0.5% of podcasts worldwide. Through her company, The Breath Effect, Emma now helps others rebuild safety in their bodies and lives using breath work, neuroscience, and compassion to regulate stress, restore balance, and create lasting calm and connection. I love that, lasting calm and connection. That's all, what we all want, isn't it, Emma? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the podcast, Janine.
I am looking forward to this conversation. Before I sort of go into other stuff, your podcast, Conning the Con, tell me all about that.
Well, it's kind of a good place to start, actually, and it actually connects the Australasian theme because while I'm Kiwi, the con man, this is the kind of the big story of it, was actually from Tasmania. So right. there's some connections between our countries, maybe not as a good positive way to start, but, you know, there's some great Australians I do love, but that one maybe not so much. So the short story of it, because it's now in like a 10-episode podcast, was in 2019. I had been out of my marriage, so separated from my lovely, amicably divorced ex-husband a few years before that now, and had two young children, raising them solo, great co-parenting relationship, lots of good stuff happening. I was building my business. I had my own home. Life was going really, really well. And I was starting to date. And if you do know New Zealand, if you do know Queenstown, I actually used to live at the end of this lake in a place called Glenorchy, about 400 people, the same amount of horses as there are people there at certain times. It was a very remote area. So friends of mine were like, get out on those dating apps, Emma. And so I was in my late 30s at that point. I was like, oh, I'll give it a go. You know, this seems to be what people are doing. A very unusual rite of passage post-divorce. And compared to my 20s when I'd first met my husband, it was a very different experience going out and swiping left and right. And I met some lovely humans along the way. I would say, you know, it's more about sharing the things to look out for as part of this experience, and that, you know, don't everybody write off because of my story. But I did have a pretty significant experience with this person I met in 2019. This is all before COVID, so COVID hadn't started by then. And I met somebody, his name then was Andrew Thompson, but actually he had changed his name legally in New Zealand. So I couldn't find out who he was. So that's kind of the biggest crux of the story. Now, as a businesswoman, as a entrepreneur, I am very very head led, but also if I have a gut reaction, I usually would follow it. So I had something going, this doesn't sound right. I'm gonna have a wee Google, have a wee search, but couldn't find out who he was. And over those next sort of 6 months, he worked his way into my life. And now that I understand sometimes some of these both red flags and amber flags along the way around trust building, gaslighting, around building this trust in a way that is beyond what is normal, because we should be able to be wooed, we should be able to be have connections and stories. Unfortunately, he prayed in it in a very extreme level for that. So once I'd worked with him, we've got to know him for that time. He'd met my family, he met my children over those few months, and that was a big deal for me because not many people had. His mother came from Australia to stay. And there were so many things that we're just getting to know and evolve. And I had before that, before I had been dating at that point, had investments in properties in the past. And Andrew, the con man, painted himself as this fabulous entrepreneur. So again, my connection of like, great, same mindset as me, building business, building life. He had set up companies in his new name, which was actually illegal for what he'd done. He had also done so many things that were actually inappropriate at that time. But the big ones were for me was setting up a business that then was to be an investment company. So he painted this picture for me to help me get ahead, single mum, starting out. Hey, babe, I can help you. I can get you to invest some money and support you along the way. I know how hard you work, which I did. I was hustle, 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 good stress, working hard, sharing my work. And I ended up going, well, I'm not going to just sign a piece of paper for no reason. I want lawyers involved. If we're going to look at this, you know, he'd been showing me all these like little proofs of what it was. And so I ended up deciding to do an investment with him. And as they do with con men, I figured out that they will do the smaller amount and then they will end up paying back. So basically, you're paying back my own money and the whole process of it. I had my lawyers all involved. They'd signed agreements. There was documents, and it ended up being a real chance moment along this process. Around 6 months into it, that I found out who he was, and it was the day after I'd made my second investment with him, which was a huge amount for me. It was 300,000 or 250,000 New Zealand dollars, so it was massive. But it was again the special relationship that we were in, this connection, this, you know, trust building that had built along the way to get to that point. And to me, it wasn't just around the relationship; it was investment. It was, yep, I've done the research, I've secured, seen your businesses, what you're doing, but it actually was all smoke and mirrors. And the day after I'd made that investment, good friends of mine who had gone, something doesn't feel right here. We just don't know what it is. They had dug deeper than I had. And I thought I could find research. They had gone onto his business registrations in New Zealand and looked into the paperwork to find where the name was, which was his real birth name from Australia. That was then put into Google. And his criminal record for being arrested in New Zealand came up for other attempts of forgery. And it was that moment in my life that my world completely fell apart.
I can't imagine what you would have felt then. It would have just, you know, level of betrayal, but from him. But I'm thinking even on your own behalf, Emma, taking in shame on yourself as well, because yeah.
Shame's a really big one, actually. It's the reason why I share the story, because if you stay in shame, it actually is very toxic and it can actually be something that will keep you in a space of not moving through. Because as I learned through those few months, after particularly that happened, and even going through the court process, which is a whole part of the whole story that we don't need to go into today, but was that I was actually a victim in this process, that I was targeted. And if I didn't speak out, then I'd be like many women that don't find a voice in this. And I would be staying stuck as a victim. And I was like, from that day that I found out who he was, I remember putting in many of the tools that I use, obviously a lot of breath work from my breathing background and somatics and physio, but one of the crucial ones was around stress mindset. And it was something from a researcher that I'd read years ago, a lady called Aaliyah Crumb, and an amazing, I guess, leading thought teacher around the stress analogies and how stress can be good for you, a lady called Dr. Kelly McGonigal. And I knew that if I could see this, it seems crazy, as good stress somehow, I would get through it and that I would learn to fight. So when I went through that moment, there was a real clear few seconds where I sat on the side of my bed that morning after I found out who he was. And it's in the moments in the podcast, and I feel the emotions as I talk about it, but it gets less the more that I talk about it because I'm desensitizing to it. So I remember fighting in that moment and saying, nobody does this to me. Have my eyes closed. Nobody does this to me, to my family, to my, I'm going to get out of this. I don't know what it looks like. I'm going to fight. And I'm going to be in the best place when I come out of it. And that may be years away, but I'm not going to let this be the breaking of me. I will make this the making of me. And I get that that's not a normal reaction.
I was going to say, it's exactly what I was going to say. That's not a normal reaction. A lot more people would usually take all of that in and then become a victim to it. Or even if they did change their thought process, it would be down the track.
Yeah. And it didn't mean that I wasn't hijacked. So I was really highly stressed at that time, that I didn't have all the emotional waves and the roller coasters, and my sleep wasn't affected for several months afterwards. Like I was still completely taken over by this experience. But there was this real clear driver for me that I can shift it and I will find control, which is a big part of the work and the research I've done for the last few years around how we shift this reaction. If this had happened to me 10 years before that, my goodness, I would have been in a puddle on the ground. I would have been getting up out of bed. It'd be a different story.
Yes, and I'm just thinking as well, we do get those moments to test us. I'm not sure how you think about them, but is this, why did he come into your life? What was the purpose behind it?
Well, there's
For
so
you,
many
for your
reasons.
learning, not for him.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. No, because he's not changed. He's actually can going back into court in Tasmania now for the next crime. So for me, there's a lot of learning. One was I wasn't listening to my gut at the time. There was a really clear physiological shift that I wasn't doing. I was very left brain driven in my head, and I wasn't listening to my gut reaction, which are many times were like, this isn't the right person. This isn't where you should be going with it. But it was kind of happening to me in many ways. It was unfolding around me, and I wasn't creating space. My nickname is often in my physio school when I was a physiotherapist was Fast Fizz. I would talk fast, move fast, do fast. So slowing down has been the bane of my life and the lesson of my life. So there's been that. But I also realized that the lessons out of going through such a traumatic experience, and while I didn't, there was nobody physically injured and there was no murder or death or rape around that process, there was a real psychological trauma that went through and a financial trauma as well, to be honest. And so for me, it was this experience that I hadn't had in my other, I guess, experiences that were challenging to me, where it was my pregnancies and in my physio business, when I was in the burnout stages, and then going through the divorce. So they were real physical stresses and they were real emotional stresses, but they weren't the combination of the trifecta. And that's really what was, I think, the change for me was going, actually, these men and women that I've worked with for all these decades have been treated inappropriately, or not inappropriately, just being not supported in the way that deals with this whole experience and the way that the brain and the body is responding to a psychological and physical and emotional trauma.
So I'm thinking, I'm going to move forward, but just thinking about the way he did it, there's a lot of patience involved, isn't there? There's a lot of time and investment.
Although what he did. Oh yeah, he must have had a big whiteboard and planning it all out. And I wasn't the only victim in this too. So in the podcast, it shares a lot more around the others. There was restaurants that he was looking at buying and they lost money out in it. There was a gin and vodka company locally near me that was he'd purchased shares in. So he had been building up for a while to get to this point. And so that's the bit that was so interesting from when I went through this process of sharing it. We actually had a psychologist come into the Conning the Con podcast because I was like, I need to understand this because this is not what I was brought up with. I was a pretty safe, normal childhood in some ways. You know, there's lots of normal New Zealand lifestyle stuff. And I was taught that to be good, you know, that was, and trust. So unfortunately, my deep empathy is one of the things that I found out from when you're looking at psychopaths is they will latch onto that. And that's part of my physio background. That's why I love what I do. I love being empathetic and compassionate. However, those were the bits that were then slightly more targets after going through separation. And as a woman, we're, you know, we really have to be working pretty hard at that stage to climb through because we're in such a disadvantage after separating with children. We are financially limited in many ways. We don't have to be, but you know, statistically, we are less likely to have savings at the end of our retirement. There's a lot of things that for me, I was like, I don't want to be that stat. And so, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why he did what he did. And I won't quite understand them because I don't think he was going to ever be able to understand it himself, except for it's a compulsive nature of who he is.
And that's an interesting point you brought up, that you are empathetic and compassionate, and that's your nature. Well, one of my closest friends is a nurse. She's now just finally retired at 78, but we've traveled together, and as soon as something happens to someone, she's the first one there, and she'll put herself out. And yes, whereas I'll help you, of course I will, but don't expect me to be your mother type, you know. It's a really different approach to things. She'll jump right in, and it doesn't really matter how it affects her. So that's really interesting because a lot of the interviews that I have, this comes up because most women that I speak to in the interviews have had something happen, and then there's a catalyst, and then they find what works for them, what worked for them to change the way they were feeling or taking things on, so then they can help others do it. It's part of
Pattern,
that
right?
lesson part that we receive a lesson. So there's another amazing person out there that can help people work through things, which is incredible. But it's that's compassionate, empathetic. They tend to be the DB, you know, the people at the end of DB, that a whole lot of things, because you're just looking for the best in people all the time. Not that you don't want to be, it's not that I don't, but it's
You're making yourself sound really cold, Janine, and I'm pretty sure that's not your nature. It's just
no, I no, it's not at all, Emma. I have boundaries.
And that's what I've learned along the way too, in many ways, in business and life, that those have been a really important fact, which I think as women, we're actually not taught those in our upbringings a lot of the times. And so when boundaries are learned and established, that's when our body and our nervous system can actually start to find some regulation.
That makes a lot of sense. No, I do have boundaries, and I can be probably a little bit more frank than I need to be sometimes when setting those boundaries. But I'm very generous with my time and energy. So that's a different thing. No, I am empathetic to people. I'm not cold. I'm sure I'm not.
not
Ask my
true.
husband of 45 years. So now, the physiotherapy work, were you doing the breath work and all this other prior, or were you incorporating that within your physio practice, or is this is where it's moved to?
I've been looking at the way that people deal with chronic pain and nervous system dysregulation for almost 20 years of my physio career. So I was trained as a musculoskeletal physiotherapist, dealing with neck and back pain, chronic migraines, headaches, fatigue, and started my own physio practice at 24, in a remote town in central Otago, New Zealand, and that grew really quickly. So I had my own experiences working with people that were coming into the clinic that were often just either not getting better or not getting better in the traditional way. And my tagline of my business back then was just fix it, because I was like, oh, I just want to get this sorted. This is my mindset. I'm like, oh, I can problem solve this. I love, I love solving a puzzle. And it became really clear that the traditional ways that we looked at it in the medical world wasn't actually the ways it was showing up. And the catalysts were really around stress and therefore the story that somebody would share. And that's what really comes into my coaching now. So over the last 20 years, and I sold my physio practice, well, gosh, for 13 years ago now, and I've been doing more of the coaching work since then, and sharing them more the tools that that have been accumulated in my invisible stress toolbox along the way. And blending it into a way that people can receive. So I'm not the ambulance at the bottom of the hill. Like, I'm not going to be someone that is in there massaging you to try and fix you now. I am the one that's going, and why do we think we got that way? Again, the questions you were asking around what are the lessons? How are we going to regulate? What is your body telling you? And what are the emotions coming up with it? And what are the thoughts behind it? And how are you going to take control? And so for me, it's been around blending not just my physio tools, so that hat and lens has been really important because it's a bit of a superpower. I can read bodies, not see through clothes, but read body types. So I'm looking at where they're gripping and holding, where the jaw is, where the shoulders are, where the gripping in the chest. Yes, your shoulder and necks look a bit tight there, Janine. It does tell us a lot. So that's where my lens has been really important, to read the body and be like, well, what does that mean to you? Why are you holding that way? And then how does that come into things like breathing patterns, which are often the driver for the nervous system staying in this dysregulated state? And it really became clear both in my pregnancy, when I had an extreme morning sickness condition called hyperemesis gravidarum, or gravidarum, depending which country you're in. So I was vomiting way more than your normal morning sickness. And it was a consequence for me of being in that stress state well beforehand. So I love good stress. I've been a type A, on the go, building business at a young age, flying by the seat of my pants. And so much of that journey was around figuring out, how do I just keep moving forward? And these lessons along the way were really my own lessons and the clients in front of me. So it really became clear that it wasn't one size fits all. There's not an X-ray or an injection or a scan that's going to fix you long term. And for me to take control over what was going on, I needed to dive into the research, done so much training around the nervous system, particularly. So, and when we look at that, that's really what's happening in the brain, and then what's happening in the body, and how this links together. And that's really the bridge or the highway between the mind and the body. And I find that most people are getting treated in silos. So, we either see the psychologist, or we see the massage therapist, or the physio, or the osteo, the chiro, but we're not often looking holistically. There's more of that now. And I really welcome that, because that means we're treating this as an integrated system. And so all these warning signs people are having was what was showing up in my clinic years ago, with the gut issues, the fatigue, this insomnia, the neck, the back, the pain. And it was just, to me, it was like, once I would treat one thing and then that would go away, whether it was with breathing work or with nervous system regulation stuff, and somatics being body-based tools, the whole thing would shift. And it would be these little light bulb moments. And so I'd go down rabbit holes into the research, into the science behind it. I'm like, oh, well, this makes sense. But I was not taught this. I have to dig into it to find this new way of looking at it.
And coming from a clinical scientist point of view, that's a reasonable shift as well.
Well, the thing for me is, it's not about being woo-woo either. It's around blending and keeping that, the science and the biology of it, but looking at the art of how we are as humans. How do we show up? The storytelling. That's what's important. What's happened to us, and what's happening in the current state, which forms the way that we're responding. It changes our relationships, changes the physiology in the body.
So it's not just breath.
No. She's not just about breathing. No, if it was just that, would that be easy? And Wim Hof would be making, he's doing it right already, but that would be an amazing way of just going, cool, here's your breathing tool. If everybody did meditation and mindfulness, that'd be all fixed. The issue is around, why does it work for some people and not for others? I used to hate, actually with a passion, meditation and mindfulness and yoga. It was ironically one of the things I was like, I don't sit still. But my issue was, my breathing pattern from a very young age was not in a calm, relaxed way. I had a stutter and a speech impediment growing up. Then my dad will always say that I didn't remember it was that bad, but it was because I wouldn't speak. It was that hard in classes. I'd just be like, And so I did speech and drama training early on, which then taught me about breathing from a very young age, even in my physio, my Pilates, and my acupuncture. It just kept coming back to learn this to then be a bridge. So the physiology and body-based approach first then allows you to do the deeper work, is what I found, and keeps you out of the state of hijacking so you can learn to listen in and release the emotional and the psychological pieces and the trauma aspects that have been stuck in the body.
So paying attention to yourself and then really asking the subconscious, hey, what's going on here?
And I think that's a big part of us that we're so busy on autopilot that we're not stopping, we're not listening, we're not actually reflecting. We're too busy, particularly as women, if we're mothers, if we're in business and entrepreneurs, then you're just often pushed into that masculine mode of just doing, doing, doing. And we're human beings, so we've actually got to like listen and slow down. And there's multiple ways of doing that. So breathing is like a little wee doorway into it, but there are other ways around it, which can be around body-based somatics to feel into where you are in the first place, noticing how you can drop it down if you've been more in that flight, fight, or freeze state, so that you can listen in. Because that, you're not going to get into your gut, you're going to stay stuck in your head, you're not going to listen to your heart and your emotions when you're in that overdrive mode.
That makes a whole lot of sense. But it's finding that, especially when you are in the sense of you've got chronic pain, that's hard to be able to deal with that. I know some friends of one friend in particular had severe chronic pain for ages and then decided not to be here. So it's really
It's huge.
it's a because you can't think of other things when you're in that sort of pain. It
Yeah. And
takes over.
it's not just a physical pain there, right? So that's when we need to deal with the emotional body and the psychological body, which is often neglected when somebody is in that space of suffering. And the questions to someone that obviously have been through that is so important. It's the how are you right now and what happened to you? Because there's a story that would have led them into that space in the first place. And then the compassion to help someone navigate it is huge. So there's a lot of disservice in our medical world around how we support people. There's some really good stuff, don't get me wrong, and doctors are needed for so many great factors. And then there's some bits where people are just not supported and nurtured and navigated to help go through that. And then we also get stuck in this old mentality. It's actually very quite an American model as well around it has to be this that's broken. So I've got this disc, this nerve, this joint that's broken versus going, actually, how is my physiology connected to this? And how are my emotions, which sounds really woo-woo, but we know that the emotions have a reflection in the body and that they're supposed to only last 90 seconds, emotions. But if we're constantly running on repeat, the thoughts in our mind and the emotions that go around, then we're driving the physiology a certain way. The physiology then affects pain pathways and affects our gut, affects our mood. And then there's so much changes in our physiology. And so I think when people are stuck in those states, it's a really hard place to be.
And then if the body is in dis-ease, then that's what we bring in as well, isn't it? So it's not just the musculoskeletal, the pain. There's those other components where we bring in disease into the body.
Absolutely.
I've never heard that before, that 90 seconds of an emotion. So we are only in an emotion for 90 seconds.
You just let it sit and then pass, but it's when it goes and on repeat, like the old stereos, the records moving around. It's like playing again and again and again. So this is the problem that I see with so many of my clients is that they're also not aware of the emotional state and how that's coming up. So we're again not listening into the way that things are affecting our bodies, and sometimes we can notice where emotions are either not sitting because it sounds really woo-woo, but you can begin to notice in the body, from angry or frustrated, how much it grips into the hands. Or if I am anxious, it's very much the breathing pattern that we see with this inhale and holding and gripping on the neck and the shoulders. And so as you become aware of the emotions, you can go, okay, well, I can shift that. How do I want to be? And a big part for me is shifting into a space of joy breathing. And that comes with you noticing that you're going to go in and out of that. We're not going to be all happy all the time. There's so many things that are going to trigger you. It's around holding the mirror up for somebody so they can shift the system themselves in the future.
So there isn't that automatic response that if I'm in this situation, I'll get angry. If I'm in this situation, I'll be sad.
Yeah, exactly. Or I'm going to stay stuck in that loop because it's normal to have emotions around situations. And the part that's important is we don't suppress and repress it. It doesn't mean we get angry at the outside world. We find healthy releases for our emotions. And I don't think in our society we've shown that very well. I was definitely not in my upbringing. It was be seen, not heard. And so it was a lot, particularly as women and girls in my family, which was really around the space of like, oh, I can't say, oh, I can't feel and express myself in the right ways. So we then behave in different ways because of it. So those emotions, suppression, repression, then affect our behavior after that.
And that happens to a lot of people, particularly women, but men and women as well,
Absolutely.
well, even more so men with emotions. Like you can't say, I feel sad. I feel angry. I know when 2020 hit and I, with my business, I had a little bit of online stuff, but basically, I was secure most of my business through networking. People get to know me and then they want to
I
work.
love you.
See, I'm not mean.
Yeah.
But when 2020 happened, everything just shut down. Fortunately, I'm in Queensland, so it wasn't as bad as that for everyone else. But all of the things that I had taken time to build in an instant. And that happened, people with restaurants and anything to do where they're socializing. But it was this instant. And my husband just could not understand the emotions that went with it. And that was the thing. I was just sad about it because, and
The
I,
grief.
but eventually, because I got annoyed that he couldn't understand, and I did verbalize that I just feel, and it was betrayed a bit, but it was just sadness that it
Misunderstood
was
as well.
loss. And he couldn't understand, but that's okay. You'll build it up. It couldn't understand the depth of the emotion. And I think that's for me to even say that was a very big deal.
So
So
I
we
think there's a
don't often get that, we don't often verbalize how we're feeling.
I think that's a really key point, though, is that as other humans, so this is a part of the biology of this and evolutionary biology, is other humans make us feel safe or not feel safe. And so one of those ways they can do that is body language with our voice, and then our ability to listen. Okay, this is why there's so much conflict in many workplaces, because we don't realize how much this is affecting our relationships, our the way that we speak to each other, because we're not actually stopping and listening and just either hearing the emotion and honoring the emotion. And that is kind of the next layer deeper work, which I love people to do and explore, is around compassion in the first place. So compassion training is a whole beautiful level of way that we can help others regulate. And a lot of the first step around that is awareness. So we can do self-compassion practices for ourselves, and this helps to regulate your physiology, but then it helps others regulate if you're offering compassion to another person. So it's not saying that your husband's not compassionate. It might just be they didn't have the toolbox to actually sit with your emotions with you to allow it to then present, to then move through. Okay, and that's where we sort of sit with it. So again, it's this other humans helping us regulate, which is why coaches can be so powerful, therapists. They help you sit with these things that feel really uncomfortable that other humans don't have the skill set in the toolbox to
No.
do.
Yeah.
And
And that's and that your our expectation of somebody else doing it as well is something that's not realistic.
But that the beauty in it is that you then get to the point where you've got to actually express it, to be like, this is what I'm uncomfortable with, and this is what I'm struggling with. And again, you could only do that when you're in safe relationships. If it's not in that, then it's always going to be conflict, and it's going to feel like an attack for certain people, depending on their psychological behaviors. So I think there's beauty in that. And when you think about that, those are the conversations which are vulnerable for you to talk about your emotions, right? That you then grow and can connect from in a different way. And then you go, actually, I've got a need for my emotions to be listened to or expressed. And maybe he's not the right person for it. So I'll then go and find a different way. But at that moment, I needed to find a way to express my emotions because they were actually feeling really a lot for me in that moment. And I'm sure, did you have a body response at that time, Janine? Was it What did you notice at that time?
I'm thinking about it. I always have the sore neck and shoulders, as you picked up. It's just a
Just having
cough.
a wee look at you here.
Yeah, my PT for 10 years tried to get me to reduce the shoulders, but it never happened. I can't think of something because I'm a type A too, and I set up things that was every day was some sort of clear out, clean up, whether it was a drawer or a whole room, whatever it was. It was every day was to get out and walk and exercise. And so I set those things for me as well. So, it was keep moving forward type of thing. And I know that was part of one of the things that you mentioned as well, is that we try to keep moving forward. So I can't remember any particular physical thing, but quite likely. Oh, now I'm thinking about it. I've had a bursitis on one of my hips for a few years. So whether that was then, but it's been a few years of going, that really hurts. Yeah.
So that's interesting too, because when you look at the hip and the pelvis, and we look at when we go back to the evolutions where the body's meant to function. So again, this is the physio hat coming on. When we're in times of stress, when that lion's chasing us, we're trying to get out of danger. So we're often, gripping and tightening with our hip flexors at the front of our pelvis. Our glute muscles are kind of gripping, our lower back muscles are gripping. And these are all designed to get us moving, to get us flighting or fighting. The problem is when we're more in that freeze state, because, we could not control what was happening around the world. Border shutting in New Zealand with lockdowns, all those things. Your world's imploding. Many people have had that experience. And from the body point of view, even just noticing it's a really good point to be like, actually, what if I haven't actually addressed the emotions that came up around that experience and how my body gripped and held and protected as a consequence of it? And then you go, well, how am I going to release my hip? How am I going to make my hip flexors in my body and my glutes move in a different way from just stretch and mobilize and get some acupuncture or some ultrasound or injections around it?
All of
You
the
know,
above.
all the above, right? The traditional hats that we put on.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So that's the work that you do is how do I release this?
Yeah, well, that's one. I guess it's the pieces, like, because everyone that comes to work with me, and I work virtually around the world. I have lots of different ways to work, whether it's on retreat in Bali once a year, or if it's in person, if you're in New Zealand, all my online courses. But when I work one-on-one, everyone's story makes a difference. Okay, so your story there was really important to even notice, like, actually, I've always carried my shoulders up here, but I've always been a type A. I've always been on the go. I've also been always breathing and then moving. So, like, again, we're mapping out what is the pathway to regulate for you over somebody else. And so straight away it'd be like, all right, well, deflate is one of the easiest tools that I share with people to help get people out of that kind of on the go deer in headlights. I think of it like, when you're really in that frontal lobe shutting down stress response. If you breathe out the mouth just once, you open your vocal cords and it's like a balloon releasing down so that you can then start to get the right biomechanics of your breathing. It won't mean that you're going to go back to beautiful, calm breathing straight away, because you may have some short, tight muscles that you've also got to address that keeps you in that breathing pattern, that keeps you dysregulated. But it starts to be a bit of a compass to be like, okay, I can feel myself not feeling good. First moment of awareness. How am I going to shift it? I'm going to deflate. Then I'm going to reset my breath, and then I'm going to notice. I'm going to get curious. I'm going to get compassionate to myself to understand what is happening to me and my body.
And that can thank you, and I'll just do some breathing with that and have a sit with it as well. The compassionate to the self. We're talking about compassion, but it's primarily to ourselves, because if we're compassionate to ourselves, it's a good learning. We know how to do it to others then.
A really good point. I think the bit that I love around compassion training is the geek in me is the science behind it. So when we are offering compassion to somebody else, we're actually still the first recipient of it. So if I'm giving you genuine compassion for what you've been experiencing, so the COVID experience and what that meant to you, how your body reacted and feeling like you weren't heard at that time. I am actually getting the one that gets this like flood of goodness because I am given compassion. The other person will then have a biological state shift down the track. And this is really important if you have got teenagers or children, because when we're regulating compassionately, they will then switch over. It might be a minute or a few seconds later, but they will then downregulate because of the compassion we're offering. So compassion is just not a head space or a heart space. It's a physiological reaction. It changes the heart rate in others, changes the blood pressure. And so we're then moving somebody else's state, which to me is kind of like a little bit of hidden magic without knowing it. So this is the work. One of the people that I really, really love is Dr. Kristen Neff, NEFF. And she's got like probably the most research that I've seen in compassion training, some fabulous books as well. But the things that she has shown and the science behind it is really powerful. So when we're actually sitting with somebody and offering compassion, and I think the barrier here is many people don't actually know how to ride the wave of compassion. So when you first have that feeling of offering some compassion, so the person in front of you might be having an emotional reaction, and depending on what you're taught around sitting with somebody's emotions, it's going to feel discomfort because our mirror neurons in our brain feel or take on that emotion and sense it and feel it in your body. So when somebody's sharing that, we have a stress reaction that goes up as well. So we have the sympathetic, that driver of adrenaline, our body's going to shift. And the good news is, though, as the heart rate goes up and our breathing goes up a little bit, we then get to the peak of that compassion wave, which is then when our parasympathetic nervous system begins to get activated, that calm, rest, digest, and that's activated by our vagus nerve, the long wandering nerve, which is like the brake pedal for the body. So again, as I'm offering compassion to you, I'm getting this regulation, and then that brings down my heart rate, my stress response, and then shifts the person in front of me as they mirror back. Hopefully, if they can sort of sense and shift that. So there's quite a lot of changes in that from a physiology. And then the chemicals that get released, this is the beauty of it, is when you get to the other side of that compassion wave, we then release oxytocin and dopamine. So from a point of view of how that works in behavior, is that's or in our biology as well, that's our hope and our courage hormones. So creating compassion, and that's where the coaching is so powerful, is it helps people shift into states of hope and courage.
That's incredibly powerful, and a couple of things popped up there. I've got grandchildren that are hitting the young teenage age, so
Oof, yes.
that's such an important thing. And being a grandparent, you don't have to be the disciplinarian as much,
No.
so you can take a not a more lenient, but a less responsibility. Yeah. The other thing that came up, and I've thought about, when somebody passes away and people say, I don't know what to say. And they really do want to offer compassion, but they don't know how to do it either.
Well, that's really important because when people go through grief, again, this is a society thing where we're not very good at sitting with grief and sitting with the sensations and emotions around it. So sometimes it's actually been able to, if it's being in person with somebody, it can be actually just trying to regulate yourself when you're around them so you can bring that person down. And that sounds really woo-woo, like that we're actually sending good vibes out. But as humans, we're reading all the time what the
Oh, yeah.
biology is. Yeah. And so we're seeing that. And plus our heart actually has like a torus around it, which radiates out. So we begin to pick up on somebody's energy. So if we're offering compassion in the same space as somebody, that can be enough. And it can be just, I'm sorry for your loss, can be enough. And just sitting with them. We expect that we have to have fill the void or fill the words. And it can be just being present, just breathing with them, being a co-regulator when you can't co-regulate or can't regulate yourself, that can be enough. And I think that's really what it comes down to, is all these experiences of trauma, grief, change, illness, is that when we learn to regulate, we can then regulate for others. And coming back to that self-compassion piece is, while we can do it for others, and as a grandparent, yes, you like that is such a great gift to give to those younger people, because they just need you to be the listener. and the connector, not the fixer, not the solving problem solver, or the putting on ideals of what it should be for life. It's like just being present is magic sauce for them. But when it comes to self-compassion, it's a beautiful way of changing that stress reaction as well. And Kristin Neff has got a 3-point model that I think I weave into so much of my retreats and my coaching, which helps people see that shift. And that first one really is around awareness or mindfulness. So what emotion do I feel? Pretty simple. And so even if we went back through what you were feeling with COVID, that emotion that you said was, I feel sadness. Okay, I feel sadness and I feel loss. And then that second piece is kindness. And so we're not very good at doing kindness to ourselves very often. But if we did that in that moment, it would be very simple. The simple phrase that I use is, no wonder I feel this way. No wonder I feel this way in this moment. Because this is, and then you add the because if you want, because this is a big shift in my trajectory of success, of my life, of my finances, of my income. It is who I am. Who am I if I'm not networking? It's how I get my connection and fill up my cup. So no wonder it meant a lot to you at that time.
I appreciate hearing that as well, because we talked about a little bit beforehand. This interview goes live while I'm around traveling Australia, so that's another huge change to what I'm doing in my business. And the
Scary.
listeners, this interview is in November 25, but we're going live in the middle of 26. So it's all this preparation and work involved and things to then have no work, just enjoy the travel and that component of it. But when you are, when I am like me, I having conversations like this fills my bucket. Sitting around talking about price of chickens doesn't fill my bucket.
I can
So that's
understand that.
even something that I'm very aware of and will need to, hence why, as I said, I started a travel YouTube channel to fill that bucket up and talk to people.
Absolutely. So, but
So,
that's noticing that need, isn't it? When things are feeling not good, again, that emotion comes up. Why does this matter to me? And then how am I going to move through it? And that's kind of where people get autonomy and authority to move through. But that third piece, I didn't finish off with that self-compassion, because we did the first two, the mindfulness and kindness. The
Kindness.
third one is common humanity. Okay. And common humanity is really this acknowledgement that I'm not alone. Others feel just like me. So, Janine, I can say to you, in my moment of COVID, when it hit me, I completely can feel how it pulls the rug out of you. And it's very scary and isolating, and the unknown was a lot at that time. So there are many people around the world that felt just like you in that moment. And what that does is it just allows you to actually honor that emotion again. To say that actually, yeah, that's really important to feel like that. That was a valid thing to be feeling.
No, that's
Very
I
easy
absolutely
steps.
love that. And because I made different health choices than 70% of the population worldwide, then finding that community as well, because that, you were isolated and banned and but found a beautiful community of that reinforced decisions and things like that. So,
But that also has an emotional load too, right?
oh
So
gosh,
I've
yes.
worked with so many people that have felt, because of that isolation, that literally societal shunning, because their gut was saying, this is not right for me. And you know what? I wish I could have done it, but in the end of the day, that my children had to, I had to be working at that stage, and I had to be going out environments, and it wish it wasn't non-negotiable. But so many people wish they could have had that line in the sand, and yet it feels very ostracized. And I've had some people that even 3 or 4 years later, so they're not going through the sadness that you've had, they're going through the grief of feeling what it was like at that time and the impact. So again, others feel just like me, that common humanity.
I like that, but and I was very, very blessed. We had a beautiful community of people, and it did make a big difference. But I interviewed a lady from LA the other day, and that's LA was a very different city than that, and she was totally isolated. And friends, and that's the thing. It was a time of losing friends and It was. So that there's been a lot happen in the last few years as well, which has
So
caused
much
a lot of
change.
this sort of, people hanging on to things and a lot more dis-ease within people, but also dis-ease within communities and the world as a place. So,
Absolutely.
and we've covered a lot of topics, and I have loved our conversation, Emma. There's just been so many aha moments for me and thinking about different components of what you've been speaking about. What 3 points do we really want to make sure that people, other than that list from Christian Neff,
Christian Neff, yeah.
3 points you want people to take away?
Okay, I think one of them would be that you can't outthink a dysregulated nervous system.
Okay.
That's number one. So when your body is giving you warning signs, you need to listen. You need to start going, how am I going to take control of this? And that is a big thing to say, but it can be that you just need to build your invisible toolbox to begin to change the way that you respond. And I guess it's the next bit that sort of flows on from that is that survival physiology shapes your thoughts, shapes your behavior, your decisions, and your relationships. So if you've got anything going on with conflict, relationships, with sleep, with back pain, neck pain, and you're feeling just, oh, I'm feeling like I can't slow down because if I do, it's all going to fall apart, then actually that's where the workers needs to be. And it can feel really confronting to do that. But the nervous system is an operating system that the high performers need to get the upgrades on, and they need to be able to shift and regulate it. And the biggest piece around this, I think, is finding the tools and the people that can resource you, but being curious and compassionate so you can create connection. That's probably what comes out of it. There's a lot of C's that come out of it. And that's a lot of the work from a amazing human, Dr. Richard Schwartz from I think America, not Canada, he's definitely American. And his work is the internal family systems. And have you heard of him before?
No, I haven't.
Fabulous. Great book to be listening to when you are traveling around a beautiful Australian
So it was
desert.
the internal.
Family systems, but his book is called No Bad Parts, or one of his books, No Bad Parts. And this is where, again, we link in with the way that our thoughts, our conditioning, these parts of us, and the neuroscience behind the way that our brain is working to govern the way that we think and the way that we feel and the way that we experience. So it kind of integrates the somatic, which just means body, those body elements into a way that we can take control.
Yeah, and there's so much on this topic. It's just absolutely mind-blowing. How can people get in touch with you, Emma?
So many ways. First one is thebreatheffect.com, thebreath, EFFECT.com. And even though it is named the breath effect, it doesn't mean that's all we do. That's usually just the wee stepping stone. Really, it should be called the nervous system regulation operation system overhaul. Doesn't really kind of fit into a catchy sort of tool.
No, it doesn't.
Instagram's a really good way of connecting, seeing sort of stuff that I share. And if you want to listen to Conning the Con podcast, but I've also done another podcast called The Bravery Academy, which is stories of resilience and growth, which is probably my great to share the con man story, but that was my like heart-led project. And there's some amazing humans on there that are sharing the science of stress and courage, as well as their experiences and then how they navigated through in a different way.
That's awesome. No, that's great. And all your details will be in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, expertise, and giving myself and the audience the opportunity to really start thinking about how we might just do things differently. But just even that word compassionate is just incredibly powerful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I am Janine Vosper, your host. Remember to go to janinevosper.com and book a strategy call. And as I say at the end of every podcast, if I am not the right person to help you, I have got the most amazing connections all around the world of people that I can recommend. Have a fabulous day, week, month, wherever you are in the world. And we look forward to you joining next time on the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.